out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Anyone could light a candle. Just like a flower in the rain. You are you.
Welcome to Our Sacred Journey with your host, Audrey Katagawa. Our program is designed to bring you inspiration, new perspectives, and experiences of love, compassion, and kindness in action. Our guests are global citizens who live and manifest their values, principles, and ideals. Come share in their activism and values that are making positive contributions to humanity. Now, here is Audrey Katagawa.
A good Monday afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Audrey Katagawa, your host of Our Sacred Journey. We really love starting off the week with fascinating guests, and today we have a particularly lovely, dynamic guest, Dr. Elizabeth Satoris. Dr. Satoris is an internationally known evolution biologist and futurist. She has a dual U.S. and Greek citizenship and lives in Spain. Such a fascinating woman. With a postdoctoral degree at the American Museum of Natural History, she taught at MIT and the University of Massachusetts. She contributed to the Nova Horizon TV series, is a fellow of the World Business Academy, and an advisor to ethical markets. Her venues include the World Bank, the United Nations, Boeing, Siemens, Hewlett-Packard, South African Rand Bank, Co Roundtable, Tokyo International Forum, Zinteo TPT, the governments of the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and the Netherlands, the Sao Paulo Business Schools, State of the World Forums, the Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions, Bahrain Banking Conferences, and the Sri Lanka Ethical Fashion Festival, among many others. She is the author of Earth Dance, Living Systems in Evolution, A Walk Through Time from Stardust to Us, and Biology Revisioned with Willis Harmon. She also has a weekly radio program on Progressive News Radio called The Oracle of Majorca. Dr. Satoris, welcome to Our Sacred Journey. You know, I usually ask my guests to help create the sacred space for our program, and I understand that you would like to share a beautiful meditation with us that is particularly meaningful to you. So please share that meditation.
Thank you, Audrey. I'd love to do that. I learned this kind of meditation from Polynesian sailors. People who crossed oceans long ago without any compasses, who had many ways of navigating, and if all else failed, if they couldn't tell where they were going from the patterns of the clouds and the waves and the stars and the seaweed drifts and many other ways that they had of trying to of navigating, they would say, "Stand tall in your canoe until you can see where you're going." And so I like to say to people, close your eyes, relax, and recognize that your consciousness is not limited to the inside of your head, but can be moved around anywhere you want. You've all been to favorite places on the planet, maybe while you were in a dentist chair or something else, having a good time instead. So take that wonderful mind of yours high above the earth now and look down as if you're seeing the human drama on a great stage. Now, if you see yourself looking down on this theater performance of everything going on in human life, you know that when you see terrible things happening by some of the actors, you don't say, "Oh, how awful those people are." You say, "What great actors they are." So it's a wonderful way to discern what's going on in our human drama without judging the people involved. Just seeing what's going on, not criticizing it, not being angry about it, but seeing it clearly so that you can start to understand the plot. And then you'll be able to come down onto this stage yourself and know what you want to do to make this improvisational theater play a better one in our own future. No judgment, just real interest in what's going on and figuring out what kind of actor are you, what parts do you love to play, and go down in there and play your role, knowing what's going on and seeing your own way clear. And then we'll make a better play, all of us together. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for that beautiful meditation. And of course, you know, you bringing it up in the context of the Polynesian Mariners has special significance for me because I am originally from Hawaii. So thank you so much. You know, Dr. Satoris, you've indicated that you're being a serious historian of Earth and humanity led you to become a futurist. Tell us what's the connection and how that's so.
Well, you know, I'm going to call you Audrey, so I hope you'll be calling me Elizabeth.
Okay, I will. Thank you. After all, we've known each other for many years.
And yes, I just found that the story of evolution I had been told when I was training as an evolution biologist just wasn't enough. And this Darwinian story about how we are kind of selfish creatures battling it out and a dog-eat-dog world, and that was human nature, was to be selfish, and all our economics based on that, just didn't seem enough adequate to me. And as I looked myself at the whole picture of evolution, dropping all the assumptions I'd been taught, what I found was that there's a wonderful cycle of maturation in nature in which species have a young, youthful phase where they're expanding, they're multiplying rapidly, they're taking all the resources they can get, and they're elbowing others out of the way. So that's kind of how Darwinian evolution talks about things. However, it gets too expensive for species to keep having to fight all these enemies. And eventually, they start negotiating with some of them and working out some cooperative schemes, and then they move into a mature cooperative phase. And I see that happening from the very earliest bacteria of this planet all the way up to now as humans. It has happened again and again, with the great leaps in evolution always being about this shift from the youthful expansive phase to the mature cooperative phase, which is what we nowadays call sustainability. So that means that looking at the past, I am able to see where can we go here and how much can we learn from nature about how to do it.
And so what does that tell us about, you know, the future in terms of, you know, we have the different phases. Basically, the youthful phase is also an immature phase. The mature phase is to move into cooperation. So are you basically saying that at present, we as a species should learn how to move into the mature state? And then from there, what does that hold for our future?
Exactly, because once you don't have to waste all your energy or all your money, in our case, on fighting battles and supporting expensive military regimes and things like that, then you have all those resources available to work out how we can cooperate and keep ourselves going. you know, all of us, our cells, our bodies expanded until we were adolescents, and then we stayed the same size. We didn't keep growing. So we have this global economy now that's grown right up to and past the limits of what Earth can support. And so we can see that our future is about peaceful cooperation and helping each other to develop, making sure everybody gets equal access to resources and making our use of resources much more sustainable than they are now.
And what happens, though, if we don't learn, we don't shift from the mature state, from the immature state to the mature state, and we don't undertake cooperative behaviors?
Well, unfortunately, humanity has thought up more suicide weapons for itself than anybody could have imagined, and we're probably going to do ourselves in. The planet will go right on. You know, we have global warming now, and we're going to be forced to cooperate. One of the things you notice about humanity, when people tell you that it's human nature to be greedy, just look at what happens in every disaster. And I know you also, besides your Hawaiian heritage, you also have Japanese heritage. And the whole world watched when the tsunami hit Japan that there was 100% cooperation after the disaster, immediate cooperation. So we know it's just as much in our DNA and in our blood to cooperate. And we can see all of the ways in which we can build a better world once we get out of this combative, competitive mentality.
So if we were to study biologic processes, you know, what the cells teach us, what does the, you know, biologic organisms around us tell us about human processes? I mean, you said it's within our DNA to cooperate. So does it ultimately boil down to a matter of choice?
Oh boy, there's just so much to talk about the biological processes of your own cells, because to start with, every one of your 100 trillion cells is actually a cooperative of ancient bacteria. The evidence that the ancient bacteria who had Earth to themselves for the first half of evolution developed these mature cooperative big cities. Every one of your cells is as complex as a large human city, and many of what we call organelles are what's left of ancient bacteria that gave up some of their DNA into that central nucleus I call the nuclear library of DNA, so they couldn't live away from the cell anymore. They had streamlined themselves so, and they're still working for us 24/7 in our bodies with the equivalent of 100 trillion large cities in complexity, all cooperating with each other and giving out free money from the little mitochondria banks and having 30,000 recycling centers in every cell. So much that we can learn right from our own bodies.
Wow, that actually, we our own bodies are the manifestation of like mega cities. And of course, in the world today, that seems to be the trend, creating mega cities. And I seem to hear that China is in the creating policies to move people out of rural areas and move them to these mega cities. So, but, you know, it seems as if there is an inherent understanding within the cells as to how to live in mega cities with this whole cooperative, harmonious functioning. So have we as human beings learned how to do that yet?
No, we haven't. We have, because we've now been in this competitive phase for about 6,000 years. I call it the empire building phase. It's the youthful phase of economics. It started out with, you know, empires run by actual emperors and empresses, and then it went into national empires, And now it's corporate empires, and all of it for the whole 6,000 years has been in this competitive, youthful mode. So we have only had the Darwinian story of evolution, which is a story for that competitive, youthful mode. And we don't yet have the part of the heroes and sheroes journey that's about weaving ourselves together in truly cooperative ways.
Okay, well, we're going to have to take a break, Elizabeth, but don't go away, listeners, because this is a fascinating conversation we're having with Dr. Elizabeth Satoris. You're listening to her on Our Sacred Journey. We have to go to break. We'll be right back.
The Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Are you interested in finding out more about divine guidance? We all possess special gifts in this world, and sometimes finding out more about them and how to use them can help us get through some of the difficult parts of our lives. Tune in to Elemental Balance, Soul and Spirit Guidance with host Phyllis Valois. Phyllis is an intuitive and medium who will use her gifts to help you find out more about your gifts. Listen every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
We're in the midst of a time of vast opportunity on our planet right now. If we can master ourselves, to have our minds be our allies, we can then lead the authentic lives we desire. But to get beyond the everyday mundane life chosen for us by our minds, we need tools. Sometimes we're not aware of the subconscious thoughts, beliefs, and conclusions our minds have made, and this is where we need the help. Tune in to Create Your Best Life Ever with your host, Allison J. Kay, and receive those tools for clearing and healing and feel what else is possible. Listen Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on Seventh Wave.
Invite meaning and inspiration to your life. This is the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey with Dr. Elizabeth Satoris. So, Elizabeth, can you please continue what you were sharing with us just before the break about, you know, we're still in the Darwinian phase. So take us to the next evolution.
Yes, the next phase. Well, the reason our bodies make such good role models for the next phase is because, first of all, you know, no organ in your body would try to make any other organ like it. You don't get your heart trying to turn the liver into another heart or the brain or whatever. So the need for real diversity is well understood in a body. And secondly, when anything ever happens to any part of the body, aid is sent there immediately. There's a deep wisdom and knowledge within this intelligent collection of cells we're made of that all of them have to thrive for the whole system to work well. And so in every cell, as I was saying, there are 1,000 more or less banks giving out free money. You never have to pay it back because money is there just to keep the economy going, not as a profitable commodity in its own right. And the three major religions of the West, Islam and Judaism and Christianity, all warned against debt money systems. So they, again, belong to a youthful phase. And now we have to mature and stop doing things like trying to make money from money and using money just to run our economies, to keep them going without inflation or deflation by regulating the amount we give out, but not to put people in debt. So that's just one example.
I see. So basically then this whole profit aspect is, when we tie it in that way, it keeps us in and of itself into the immature phase.
Yes, it really does. When we put profits above people's well-being, it doesn't work well. In business, we talk a lot now about triple bottom line, which means planet, people, and profits. As long as business serves people and is good for the planet, it's fine for businesses to make enough profits to reinvest or to give away for other purposes. But money itself should not be a profitable commodity.
I see. So I think that is a really interesting point of view. How do you recommend? I mean, what's your recommendations to all of us and to the people who are in business? And of course, everybody has to make a living. What should we do to create the shift? And what's the big picture, the big story that we need to hear about to help us accept this transformation that needs to take place?
Right. Well, you know, Joseph Campbell, the great mythologer, showed us 25 years ago when he and Bill Moyers did that wonderful series on myth, that the most common myth across cultures is the hero's journey. And what we see in hero's journey stories is a lot of dragon slaying and fascinating adventures. And then at the end, the hero, let's say it's Odysseus in the Odyssey, comes back home, becomes a good citizen, ho-hum. It's not a very interesting part of the story. And yet that is the part that we now need to write. How do we go from the excitement of all the dragon slaying, all the competitive economics, you know, to the ecstasy of real communion among each other, of understanding community and communion when things are cooperative and peaceful and creativity can really flower?
So you seem to be making a distinction here about communion and I have heard you make this distinction and communication. So first of all, share with us what the differences are and how do we maximize our ability to shift to communion, and also tell us what communion is.
I will be happy to. Communion is what I call the way that my cells trade information with each other. And not only my cells, but everything in nature is directly transmitting information. We know every day I see new articles about how the funguses know what the plants need and bring them the right, just the right chemicals and trade them one, the excess ones they have with other plants and so forth, all quietly underground in this great communion network. Know that my cells, each of my cells knows what it's doing. And I've worked a lot with indigenous people who can transmit information directly that way, mind to mind, heart to heart. So it's in our own human birthright. We have a little bit of sense of it in what we call telepathy. But I like the word communion for the deep sharing. Now, one of my gurus is J. Allen Boone, who wrote a very beautiful book called Kinship with All Life. He was called the St. Francis of Hollywood, and he learned from the first Hollywood movie star dog how to do this direct transmission from mind to mind. And after the dog taught it to him, he said, we were able to engage in hours of deep philosophical communion, conversations through this communion, not as man and dog talking to each other, but as the universe, the cosmos, talking us to each other. In other words, communion puts you into the flow of all the information of the universe. It's a recognition of our oneness. While language, which gave us communication, can help us pretend we're separate from nature and from each other, and can be used to deceive each other, which you never can do in direct communion.
So direct communion basically is a completely transparent sharing of yourself exactly. with the other and the other with you. So there can be no deception taking place. It is just understood and known.
That's right. Yes.
But how do we shift from are basically are having been entrained in the processes of communication and shift to communion.
Well, you mentioned transparency as a very important feature of communion, and that's one of the keys. If you look at what's happening in our society over the last decade or two, you see that with the Enron affair, we got transparency beginning in big business. And with the exposure of things going on in the Catholic Church that no one wanted to know about, we got some transparency in religion. And now we're getting some transparency in government through WikiLeaks and things like that. So if you understand that we need to reclaim this ability for communion, then you start to see this pattern of making our human affairs transparent to each other. And another thing that I love to think is possible is that our iPhones, the cell phones, the texting, especially of young people, is also building an internet as fast as the internet. Think of the internet as being based on communication. And the internet is when kids start transmitting these emoticons, they are sharing feelings. When one girl texts to another and adds the emoticons of, let's say, jealousy or love or something, the one she's communicating with can commune the feeling, can pick up the feeling and resonate to it no matter how far away on the planet she is. And this sets up this resonance between them, leads to direct communion. People who love each other often know what each other are thinking, even when they're very distant from each other. And we can practice that inner communion.
And how do we practice that?
Well, there are lots of ways you can find, even on the internet or in lots of spiritual how-to books, that you bring yourself into a meditative state and you bring yourself into a connection with that other person. You could make a date and do it at the same time, and you could practice transmitting colors to each other or numbers. And you'll find out that it doesn't take much practice before you can pick up such simple things. And then you can take that to communing with your houseplants or the trees in the park. They're all living, intelligent beings that all can commune. And when you silently say hello to trees and thank your flowers and things, they know it. They know it. And you will feel their response.
So that is the unitive consciousness that you were alluding to earlier, that we are inherently already existing within and is also within us. So it is an inseparable. And this is an inseparable part of not only myself, but of all of us. So we have to learn the ways to be able to not only acknowledge, but to accelerate our ability to be in communion with each other.
Absolutely.
And if we were to do that, would it help us to move out of the immature state to the mature state even more?
You bet it would, because for one thing, the transparency is a mature way of treating each other, and a lot about this expansive economy, which has created so much inequality, was based on not leveling with people, on deceptions, as we know from all these cases in which the transparency comes about. In every case, the transparency is coming about because we're learning about things that were hidden from us, lies that were told to us, all kinds of deception. So that alone, moving away from deception into treating each other with love and respect and complete openness, is a major key to a better future.
So, but often, though, the deceptions are created by, people with particular interests to retain and retain their power base and their, avenues of control to increase their power as well. And in that context, can we see that power and money are related in this immature paradigm?
You bet. And of course, a good case in point right now is that people are trying very hard to get GMOs, genetically modified organisms, in the food supply labeled. Now, companies like Monsanto tell
you...
Oh,
now you're going into a really huge field and one that I really want us to get into. But we're going to have to take another break. Hold that conversation until we come right back with Dr. Elizabeth Satoris.
This is the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Are you in tune with yourself? Listen every week for Ecstaticism, Embracing the Journey to Awakening, featuring host Sherry Lynn. When we understand that we are not alone in this world and have infinite love available to us at all times, we can be ecstatic and call upon the assistance we need to reconcile and release our past, fear, and addictions. Listen to Ecstaticism, Embracing the Journey to Awakening, live every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Joy, bliss, and ecstaticism is our God gift to experience. Be joy, be peace, be love. Being Outside the Box is your thrival guide to living outside this reality. Are you always waiting for your ship to come in? Do problems happen to you? What if you created your life rather than sitting by waiting? Do you live in the fantasies of this reality? Winning the lottery? Waiting for your prince, princess to come? Even being healthy? Do you always do what is expected of you rather than choosing for you? What if the rules didn't apply? And what if you could thrive from a different space? Join host Lynn Waldrop for Tools to Being Outside the Box. Listen Thursdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on 7th Wave.
The Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Seek greater awareness.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey with Dr. Elizabeth Satoris. Now, Elizabeth, you were just about to launch into a whole area here about genetically modified foods, and that is something that I myself am particularly interested in. So please proceed.
Well, we've been talking about the difference between communication and communion, and I've been saying that communication, which is done through language, permits us to deceive each other, while communion is completely transparent, telepathic kind of communion among people, and that the different ways in which we're seeing the transparency that belongs to communion come out in our society is transparency in the business world and in governments and in the church and all over in our society. We're seeing this demand for clear communications, which can move you to communion. And I said GMOs, the genetically modified organisms, is a good case in point for the deception that's carried on. People want their food labeled genetically modified if it is genetically modified, and there's such huge resistance from the companies providing it. All the time they're telling you it's good for you, they don't want to put that on the label of the food. So there's something wrong there, you can see. They should be proud of putting that label on it if it's really good for us. And so these are important things for people to push for having the truth told to them, to push for knowing how banking works, how money works. Why is money a profitable commodity? Why are people from Monsanto allowed to have positions in the Food and Drug Administration, in the government, writing laws in their favor and then leaving and going back to their profitable companies? And I recently read, Audrey, that in order to get any bill through Congress, it has to be quite expensive. There are cheap solutions to many of our biggest problems, and we cannot get them through Congress because Congress has to pay off the lobbyists that don't want these things to happen, and therefore you can't propose cheap solutions to things. Now, this is pretty outrageous, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And of course, that's another way, though, that the moneyed interests get to protect their moneyed interests and to retain their power.
That's right. And that's the kind of power that doesn't belong to a mature system. That's the kind of power you see in youthful economies that are only about expansion. And we must come to our senses now as a globalized species. And when I talk to pretty high-level business people, I say to them, thank you for being the heroes and sheroes of globalizing our species. That was a necessary evolutionary step. However, I'd like to invite you now to become the heroes and sheroes of our mature phase, where we stop this physical expansion and we grow recycling and we grow making things without toxins, and we move into a sustainable phase in which we reduce these inequalities. You know, people... There have been nice studies showing that more equitable societies have much happier people. And the rich people are no happier than the poor people when there's a huge economic divide, because they have to constantly focus on how can we protect our wealth? How can we keep this inequitable system going? Give me one more fix before it's over, you know, that kind of mentality. But they haven't been given a good story that we need to move, as I said before, from the adventure of the dragon-slaying part of the expansive hero's journey to the ecstasy of communion, of me seeing ourselves as spiritual beings having a physical experience, of cosmic consciousness as the source of the material world, rather than the Western science view that consciousness is a late emergent product of an accidental physical universe. See, that Western science was really appropriate to this growth phase of the youthful phase. And many scientists now are looking to the Eastern view of consciousness as primary for the mature phase. So that's another thing to talk about in directions to go in.
And what about the Eastern view that is particularly compelling in being able to wrap our minds around the next phase?
Well, when you look at the universe as being just pure matter energy and eventually somehow evolving into complex creatures that have brains and squeeze out consciousness from that, it's a very, very different view from saying, no, consciousness is the very source of everything else. And in that kind of a worldview, which is common to Buddhism and Taoism Vedic science and, you know, the Eastern philosophies, they call them sometimes, but they too are religions. They have no external God creator because the entire universe is equivalent to God. It's all that is, I call it sometimes big mind, great intelligence. And when you take that assumption of how our universe works, then you see a living universe evolving within it, and you see yourself as little mind within big mind, little mind that can connect into big mind, that can be expansive, and that will then see all other human beings as reflections of yourself. And then you don't want to fight anybody because you feel the love of that kind of a cosmos. And you want to get on with the grown-up phase, with the mature phase of, whoa, we're facing the biggest disasters in history, and we can do it if we work together in cooperation.
Well, of course, as we look at the world today, it's becoming increasingly complex, even as it becomes smaller through this whole globalization process. So, it does present a lot of challenges. And of course, it would seem to be common sense that no one person, no one government, no one company can tackle these huge challenges. So I think it is very important for us to be able to embrace cooperative models, because that's the only way we'll be able to tackle these major challenges.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, just yesterday I was reading David Gershon's new project for cities, and he makes a very important point that cities can get things done that nations can't. National governments are so enthralled to big business in this immature economic mode that it's hard for them to get things done. It's easier for city governments to do things. And you mentioned before that China was building lots of big, huge new cities. And China is such an enigma to me because they're very smart. They know that coal is going out of style. They know, and so they're working just as hard on burning up the coal as they are on building the solar collectors. And they have one foot in each of these worlds. They have one foot in this juvenile world, still trying to build their economy fast, and another foot in that future where things are sustainable. And they've already made some efforts to actually design and build huge self-sustaining cities with gardens and water supplies and energy, clean energy supplies and things. So I hope that they will go more and more in that direction. Anyway, do we have time to talk about David Gershon's new system right now?
Sure. We have about 3 minutes to talk about it.
Okay, great. Well, I love the marketing of this. He says he's talking about putting us on a low-carbon diet. And we all know now that low-carb diets are good. And boy, I read more arguments for them now to get rid of our refined flour and sugar. Mm-hmm. And a low-carbon diet, and he talks about losing weight by the ton. And he means losing the weight of the emissions going out of city, the carbon emissions, which you measure in tons, actually. And so they get volunteers from, they go city block by city block, finding people who are willing to, you know, just turn their air conditioner temperature up a little bit, or their heaters down a little bit, or a couple of less hours a day of using them, or with their cars, whatever, ways of saving energy, and then feeding back what so many people together, how much they're saving. Oh, we got rid of 5,000 pounds of carbon, you know, in this length of time. So people like to cooperate when they see the feedback of the results. And we all know we're going to a hotter planet now, and that we've passed the tipping point on this. We have to adapt to a hotter planet.
Well, I can really relate to that today, especially here in New York City. We're on a heat wave, and it is very hot. So tell us more. I mean, I like this whole idea because people like to be able to see the success of when they accept, you know, a way of living and it proves to work. So this whole aspect of going on a low carbon diet is very fascinating, but ultimately it boils down to each individual citizen taking responsibility to see that their participation in the whole process of helping to bring down carbon emissions and just how we live our life every day has impact on the whole.
Yes, because we want to feel empowered. We don't like to feel helpless in the face of big crises. And this is exactly the kind of project that can bring a lot of people together to show how cooperation, working with each other, can make a real impact. And the same thing is true of protests against big companies. There's a wonderful guy named Bill Shireman, who is the wrote a book with Tachi Kiuchi, who was the CEO of Mitsubishi America some time back, called What We Learned in the Rainforest, where they looked at the natural systems of rainforests and came out saying no problem any business has ever faced has not been faced and solved in a rainforest. So again, in nature, we find many, many clues to how we can do things better and more cooperatively.
So wonderful. We're going to have to go on another break right now, and we're having this fascinating conversation with Dr. Elizabeth Satoris. You're listening to her on Our Sacred Journey. We'll be right back.
The Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
If you are looking to shift from struggle to a life of alignment with your deepest truth, you'll want to tune in to Thresholds to Awakening with host Sway Emily Spilkin. Our program will help you discover that your deepest challenges are not mistakes, but opportunities to become who you really are. Thresholds to Awakening. Enter your darkness to find your light, where Sway speaks with spiritual luminaries, cutting-edge thought leaders, and experts in the field of transformation. Listen live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel. Explore subconscious programs, belief systems, and past life memories that may be sabotaging your life. Join host Dorian Light on her show, All About You, as she helps you to shift, change, and heal your life. Each week, Dorian does a light session using psychic energetics and the language of light to energetically shift and clear negative patterns you have stored regarding that week's topics. Step into the realm of infinite possibilities for your life. All About You airs live Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on 7th Wave.
The Change. The Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
We're listening to Dr. Elizabeth Satoris on Our Sacred Journey. So, Elizabeth, please continue what you were sharing and alluding to about, things getting hotter on the planet. So, go ahead.
I remember, in the 1980s, my friend James Lovelock, who started the whole Gaia hypothesis, seeing Earth as a living entity called Gaia after the ancient Greek goddess's name that means Earth in Greek. And he used to say, pray for an ice age. We're due for one, but it looks like humanity is tipping us into a hot age instead. And this is a time of change, and the planet is going to go one way or the other. Now, humans have survived about a dozen ice ages. It all happened at times when we hadn't built huge infrastructure cities on coasts, unless that was the case with Atlantis and Mu, that's why they disappeared. But it seems that we have tipped the Earth into a hot age. And a lot of people are doubting that now because they see so much cold weather coming to North America and Europe. But this is part of the heating of the planet. Overall, the average temperatures on the planet are definitely going up. And what happens when you evaporate so much ice from the poles is that ice is now up in the atmosphere and it has to come down somewhere. And that's why you're seeing so much flooding and, hot places getting hotter and cold places getting colder for now. It's a redistribution of the ice onto the land in the form of rain. And then eventually when the skirt of ice around the edges of our two biggest rocky icy islands on Earth, which are Antarctica and Greenland, when that skirt of sea ice melts, then the big chunks will start sliding off. And scientists would like to think this is going to happen in a nice, smooth, gradual curve, but it won't. It'll go plop, plop, and the sea level will rise in jumps. Now, 13 of our 20 largest cities in the world are at sea level, so they're all going to be affected at once when this starts happening. And that will be different from a tsunami here and a tornado there and a fire here and a flood there. because so many more people will be affected. And the best way for us to prepare now is to work with your local community, whether you're in a city or in the countryside. Look to starting to grow as much local, fresh, organic food as you possibly can in cities, on rooftops, in windows. The internet is full of good advice on this. And if you're not in a city, of course, that makes it even easier. So we need to look at ways to keep ourselves cool. And I did a whole trip to Morocco to look at how they put flat pans of water up on the roofs of buildings. And in the daytime, that water reflected off the sun. And in the night, they had hot water for showers when the desert gets cold, that were gravity fed with no machinery needed. And in their medinas, the walls are very high, surrounding very narrow streets like the canyons they saw it in nature, so that the sun only takes 2 minutes to cross over and it never gets hot down on the street level. Loads of things, loose white clothing, taking naps in the hottest part of the day. You know, there are solutions. Humans have lived in deserts for thousands of years, but we need to work locally and we need to work cooperatively.
Well, I think that really is going to compel us to tap into our creativity very, very deep within ourselves to learn how we can participate in, you know, helping us through the major disruptions that may be coming around the corner. Now, you have a weekly radio program called The Oracle of Mallorca on Progressive News Network. And, you know,
Progressive Radio Network.
I'm sorry, Progressive Radio Network. And, you know, you actually live in Mallorca, Spain, and you moved there from Santa Barbara, but beforehand, Bart, you were in Barcelona. And you seem to be well integrated in Mallorca now. And what are your dreams for this new community that you have embraced?
Well, I came to Mallorca because I had read that it was one of the few islands of its size in the world that could be completely sustainable. It has an amazing potential for a food base with both, for instance, the northern fruits like apples and pears and plums and the tropical fruits like oranges and stuff. And we have loads of almond trees and we have the best olive oil in the world and we have fish all around the island. And the Moors brought the ancient spelt wheat here for bread. And so it's got just everything it needs, all those good Mediterranean herbs that are also medicinal. And a little over half a century ago, it was producing all its own energy through windmills and was raising almost all of its food. So the land hasn't been too destroyed by farm chemicals yet. We do have problems. I had to lead a campaign against Roundup being sprayed in my village. And so I'm working on sustainability here, and in the 5 years I've been living on the island, more and more people are coming together to learn permaculture and to look at the alternative energies and things. So this is, it's really fun to be somewhere where you can work with local people and actually get some changes made.
Well, that is really living, planning ahead, and being able to ascertain what's coming down the road and consciously selecting a place to be that you see as being able to be self-sustaining and flourishing for one's health. So I applaud you in your foresight, but not only having the foresight, actually implementing it. Now, what final message would you like to share with our listeners?
Well, what you just said is, you know, I believe in practicing what you preach, so I have to work on the ground on sustainability if I'm going to talk about global sustainability. And I think the message I'd really like to leave people with is make sure that whatever way you choose to be in this human drama and be helping it to get better for everybody is something you love doing. Because if you love to do it, you'll become an attractor to others who want to do it with you. And we can do this, we can cooperate, and we can have fun solving these great problems that face us today. So as Rumi said, my favorite poet, he said, "Why do you stay in prison when the door is so wide open?" So let yourselves out of the prison of fear And get together with your neighbors and your friends and have wonderful conversations and get some good projects going. Lots of love to you all.
Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth. You know, you have been such a shining example and such a beacon of inspiration of actually living the way you are helping others to share about, you know, cooperating with others. And I know that you are a real dynamo in your community because having known you for many years, one of the things that really impressed me about you is you are a very dynamic person. You embrace life so happily. You have so much creativity. You are not afraid to try new things. And you really live what you share. And so I very much applaud you. And of course, I'm very grateful to know you for so many years and to have shared many wonderful experiences together with you. So Elizabeth Satoris, thank you for sharing your insights with us as an evolution biologist and futurist with an important voice that I hope we will all pay attention to and heed and do as you are doing, which is to actually live your values, live your passion, and to actually practice it every day. You have certainly given us much food for thought, and may God bless you and the good works that you do to inform us about our need to listen deeply to the teachings of nature and the importance of developing communion with all of life. Join us again next week for more inspiring program on Our Sacred Journey. This is Audrey Kitagawa, host of Our Sacred Journey, and my special guest, Dr. Elizabeth Satoris, and I bid you all a very good evening.
Thank you for being a part of Our Sacred Journey. Please join Audrey Kitagawa again next Monday at noon Hawaiian Standard Time, 3 p.m. in the West, 6 p.m. in the East, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. This week, think about the contributions of love and compassion that you'll make and how together we can create a better, harmonious, and more peaceful world. Just like